We don't have to say much about children's church. When the slide goes up, people know what to do, so that's good. Well, if you were watching at the very beginning, you heard my sermon in 90 seconds. That video is just perfect for where we are in this series, the sermon series. We may want to play that again. I think there's a lot packed in there. I'm not sure when you first got paid to do some work, what your first job was. I think I've mentioned this here before, but my first paid job was as a farm worker. I was a field worker on a muck farm in northeastern Ohio when I was 11 years old. It was called muck because it's in an area of Ohio where they drained some swampland, and it left behind this rich black soil, which is terrific for growing fruits and vegetables. Well, at least vegetables, I guess. It was a fruit or a vegetable farm. They grew green onions, radishes, about six different kinds of lettuce. I didn't even know there were six different kinds of lettuce, but I discovered that. Radishes and other things like that, and they would pack them up, and we would ship them off to Kroger and other supermarkets. Well, the reason I tell you about that is because that was the setting in which I first received my first ever paycheck. My first ever paycheck. I was 11 years old. My first paycheck was for $40. I got paid $1 an hour, and I had worked 40 hours that week, and so I got paid $40. I was ecstatic. I had never had that much money that belonged to me in my hands at one time before in my life, and I knew that I was rich. And I was excited because I had earned all of that money in just 1 week. Well, now, you're laughing a little bit, but remember, I was 11 years old, and this was 40 years ago. I'm in my 50s now, so I was 11, that's, 40 years ago, so a dollar was worth a little bit more back then than it is now. I had all summer to earn that check over and over again, and I didn't even do the math to figure out how wealthy I would be by the end of the summer. Part of what's funny about it is that at that point in my life, I didn't really have anything to do with the money. I mean, our family wasn't that well off, and I wasn't used to my parents handing me money to just spend on things I wanted to buy. It just wasn't the way things worked back then. And so this was really the first occasion I had to receive money, and I didn't really have anything to do with it. I had been trained and taught that I should give some of it back to God, usually about 10%. But I had so much at that point that giving $4 back was not a problem. I didn't miss that because I still had the rest of it. By the end of the summer, I had several hundred dollars in the bank, and I just knew I was unimaginably wealthy at that point. But I did allow myself one splurge at the end of that summer. At the end, I don't know if this was my mother's idea or my own. I can't remember back that far on that detail. But I had one splurge, something I thought about I'd really love to have, and I could afford it easily, and I bought myself a clock radio. I found a picture of what it looked like this week. Isn't that beautiful? I'm amazed at how old it looks, look at that picture. But hey, that was pretty special at the time, and I took good care of that for many years. It probably cost me $20, I don't know. But remember, that was half of my week's pay, so that was a splurge. Now, thankfully, as I got older and I had bigger bills to pay, my paychecks got bigger, and my income went up. But as I did that, giving away 10% of it, giving away some of it, became more challenging. And at a certain point, I thought, like probably you have, and maybe think right now, wait a minute, I earned this money. I was the one who went out there and got sunburned and who sweated incredibly and who was dog tired at the end of the day. I earned this money. It's my money. Why does God have any claim on it? Why does God have a claim on this money that I worked so hard for? Maybe that's a question that's on your mind this morning. Well, eventually, as I thought about it more, I realized that I had more to be thankful for than I was admitting to myself. For instance, my body was then and still is relatively healthy and strong. I don't get sick very often. I have all of the parts I'm supposed to, and I've been relatively healthy. I didn't pick the size or the shape of my body or its health, and yet I counted on that to be able to do this work. I didn't create my body. It was given to me. Similarly, my mind, my mind worked well enough that I was able to be employed. I could understand the instructions. I could carry them out. I could learn more about my job. I didn't create my mind. My mind was given to me. My home life was stable enough, my family where I was growing up was stable enough that when I went to work, I could focus on my work. I wasn't always getting called in to help with things as I got older, to help solve problems and resolve disasters at home. I didn't create or choose the family I was born into. That was given to me. I was also, along the way, I was able to complete high school. I got a high school diploma, which not everyone is able to do. I eventually completed college and got a college degree, went on to graduate school. Not everybody has those opportunities. Those opportunities, I didn't make them happen. They were provided to me. Now, I sought out some of them, but in large part, they were given to me. And I'm particularly humbled because even though I have graduate degrees, in each case, the bills, the cost of that was paid by scholarships and the generosity of other people. And so that really, truly, I did some work for it, but it was truly given to me. I realized as I thought about this that I happen to be white, male, American. All of those confer advantages to me that I completely take for granted and that have shaped my options as I've gone through my life. I didn't choose any of those things. All of those things were just, I was born into those things. They were given to me. And some of us here were born into a wealthy family that you didn't choose. You might have chosen if you'd had a chance to, but you were just born into a family that had plenty of resources, or you were born into a family business and you took your place there, but it was given to you. It wasn't something that you made happen or you created. So, is all the money that I have earned really mine? Mine in the sense that it is solely the result of my own effort and solely the result of what I chose to do? No. No, not at all. Is all of the money that you earn, all of the resources that you have authority over, are those all truly yours in the sense that they're solely the result of your effort, and that you had no advantages, none of these things that I listed were given to you? No, that's clearly not true for any of us. And also, I also am convicted because I realize that when I think about my money and my earnings in this way, I realize that compared to the way many people around the world live, I am fantastically wealthy. And I do realize sometimes that I'm so comfortable and so well-fed that it's distracting because I get hooked on those things. And I don't want them to go away. I don't part with them easily. You know, last week, Pastor Jeremy kicked off this sermon series that we're calling Not Really Mine. Not Really Mine, by reminding us that our talents are given to us by God. And I want to suggest to you this morning that our money is also given to us by God. And in fact, as we'll see over the next several weeks, this same thing is true of all of what we have, all of our resources and the things that we control or command that we often take for granted. Things given to us by God include the things we've already mentioned, but it also includes creation or the earth. The earth was given to us. It wasn't something that you put here for your benefit. In June, Pastor Ryan preached a sermon about our responsibility to care for the earth. But we'll also talk about time. God has given us time to work with, to steward, to take care of. God has given us health, our bodies. God has given or entrusted talent to us, as Pastor Jeremy highlighted last week, given us money and relationships. And over the next several weeks, we're going to explore those different areas of things that we're tempted to think are ours. But we want to think of them and realize that they're not really mine. So who owns them? Who owns them? And if given to us, what do we do with them? I really liked how Jeremy phrased this last week. He said that in this series, we're going to be asking the question, or talking about what we do with what God gives us. What we do with what God gives us. That's essentially stewardship, caretakership. Stewarding is, we don't really talk about steward so much anymore, so it's a little bit of an old word for us. But a steward is someone who cared for the things of his master for someone else. So what we do with what God gives us is what we're going to be looking at. So today what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you some general big picture truths and then talk briefly about how they apply to money. That's what we're going to do today. So let's step back and look at a really big picture truth, which may be completely obvious, but I think is worth reminding ourselves from time to time, and that is that God created everything, and so God owns everything that he created. You know, if you make a quilt and you show it to someone, you own that, right? You get to, and what I mean by that is you get to decide what happens to it, right? If you build a bookcase or you have the capacity to build maybe build a car. I had a friend once who built a dune buggy out of a kit. Well, he bought the materials, he put it together, he owned it, so he got to decide what to do with it. If you build your own little Lego car or ship or building, you get to decide what happens to it. That's why it's so annoying when your brother or sister thinks they can decide what happens to it, right? Because you own it. Well, the Bible tells us that the earth and we are the same way before God. Psalm 24 says, the earth is the Lord's and everything in it. Everything in it. The world and all who live in it, all the people, all the living beings who live in the world are his. For he founded it on the seas and established it on the waters. The earth is the Lord's and everything in it. What it means here is not just the land or the soil, but everything in the created order. He owns it. He gets to decide what happens to it because he made it. He brought it into being. This is actually an important verse for the Mennonites who settled here in Lancaster County in the early 1700s. There's a history written about them that you may have seen. It's in our library called "The Earth is the Lord's." This verse was important to them because they understood it to be a mandate to care for the earth because it belonged to God. It was given to them. Yeah, they purchased it, and they reaped the benefits of working the land, but they understood that it had been put here by God, and they understood this verse to be saying, this earth doesn't ultimately belong to you, it belongs to God. The earth is the Lord, so take care of it well. Similar idea is expressed in Psalm 50, where God is speaking. He says, and here he lists animals. He says, I have no need of a bull from your stall or goats from your pens, for every animal of the forest is mine. Every animal of the forest is mine. I created all of those animals. They're mine. And the cattle on 1,000 hills. Just a poetic way to say it. Every cow you see is mine. 1,000 being a huge number. Every cow, all the cattle are mine as well. I created them. I know every bird in the mountains, because I made them too. And the insects in the fields are all mine. If I were hungry, I like this phrase, if I were hungry, I would not tell you, for the world is mine and all that is in it. You know, when we think that God needs something from us, God says to us, if I were hungry, if I needed something, I don't need things, but if I did, I wouldn't need to come and ask you because the world is mine and all that is in it. I created it. The Bible tells us that God created us too. God created human beings. Some of us are very familiar with the early verses of Genesis 1 where God said, Then God said, let us make mankind in our image, in our likeness, so that they may rule over all these things I've created, the fish of the sea and the birds in the sky, over the livestock, the wild animals, over all the creatures that move along the ground. So God created mankind in his image, in the image of God he created them, male and female, he created them. God says, let us make mankind in our image so that they may rule over, so that they can reflect. We were created to reflect God in the created world. We were here to rule over God's creation. Let's go to the next slide. God blessed them, the next verse. God blessed them and said to them, be fruitful and increase in number, fill the earth and subdue it. And hear this phrase again, rule over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky, over every living creature that moves on the ground. Well, you may have not have thought about how much God gives them in these three verses. How much God gives to them, things that they didn't choose, things that they didn't bring to be into being. God gave them the earth. God put them here as part of the created order. He gave them their bodies. Chapter 2, the other account of creation says that he gave them the breath of life. He gave them the capacity to be alive. Without God's gift of life, we wouldn't be alive. He also gave them responsibility. Here twice in these verses as he charges them to rule over the earth, to rule over the created order. He gave them his image. He gave them the capacity or the ability to grow and to multiply both themselves and other creatures, to tend to them, to see that they would grow and multiply and fill the earth. But did Adam and Eve choose any of these things from a menu? Did they bring any of these things about? No. Through their own efforts? No. These things were all just given to them by God. And they were commissioned to use those things to rule over the creation. Now, we hear that phrase and we think of kind of a stern rule giver, or like if you think of somebody ruling over, we think of dominance and authority and somebody sort of exercising power. But think about how God rules over his creation. How does God rule over us? God rules over us lovingly, sacrificially, sometimes at great cost to himself, and God rules over us for our own good. The things that God does for us or purposes for us are for our own good. God doesn't rule over the earth selfishly or destructively or recklessly. No, God rules and calls us to follow him in his likeness by exercising the responsibility and the authority that we have lovingly, sacrificially, sometimes at great cost to ourselves, and for the good of those we serve, for the good of those under our care or the people that we can serve. That's what I think it means when it says, rule over the earth. Represent me well in this earth that I've created. But it also means that the earth is not mine. It belongs to God. It means that my body is not really mine. It belongs to God. It means that my life as a descendant of Adam and Eve, of the human family, my life, my responsibilities are not really mine. The opportunities I have, they're not really mine. They're given to me by God. So in a really simplistic way, let me tell you, this is how God's economy works. God's economy works. There's more that you could say about this, obviously, but first thing we've already said, God owns everything. God is the owner of everything that is. And secondly, God gives us, step two, is that God gives us some of his things. God gives us or entrusts to us some of his things for three purposes or three reasons. First of all, to enjoy them. God gives us things to enjoy them. Secondly, he gives them to us to care for them, to steward them, to multiply them, to manage them well. And thirdly, he gives them to us to serve other people or to bless other people with, so that God is blessing people around us through us by what he gives us, by the gifts that he gives us. And this applies to all of the things that I mentioned before and the things that we'll look at over the weeks to come. The earth, our time, our health, our relationships, our talent, our money, all of these things given to us by God for these three purposes, at least these three. To enjoy, he gives them to us so that we will enjoy them, so that we can benefit from them, that we can provide for ourselves, we can provide for our families. He also gives them to us so we'll care for them, tend to them well, help them to grow and multiply, and then also to be generously using them to serve and bless the people around us. But a lot of us, a lot of you are probably like me, we get stuck on that first one. Maybe we do some of the second, maybe we're good at the second, but I get stuck on enjoying the stuff that God gives me because I think they're mine anyway. When they come to me because I work, I think, okay, I own that one. That belongs to me. And maybe I develop some skill in caring for the money I receive or the stuff that I get. We often forget about that third one. That part of why God entrusted these things to me is so that I would be a source of blessing and care and service to other people. I think this is one of the reasons why understanding this basic framework here is one of the reasons why gratitude is a key attribute to continue to cultivate and develop. It's a key attribute because it reminds us that all of what we have comes from God. And so God's call to us, one of the ways to understand God's call to everyone, all of us included, would be to say God calls us to cooperate with the way he designed us, with the purposes for which he created us, to cooperate with this economy, the way he's designed things. That would be one of the ways to understand God's call on us, to cooperate with the purpose for which we were created. Okay, so that's big picture. What does that have to do with money? Well, money wasn't mentioned in any of the verses that we looked at. But money is one of the things that God gives to us or entrusts to us. In ancient times, it was God providing for basic needs. A lot of verses in the Bible about food, I will provide food for you. Mostly in our time, though, we get those things in a cash economy. You need money to acquire those things because not many of us grow all of our own food. We may grow some of it. In the letter to Timothy, 1 Timothy, Paul writes to him about these things, about money specifically. He says, "Teach those who are rich in this world not to be proud and not to trust in their money, which is so unreliable. Their trust should be in God, who richly gives us all we need for our enjoyment." I didn't just make that up. He gives us all we need for our enjoyment. Tell them to use their money to do good. If you read the highlighted text here, it says, God richly gives us all we need for our enjoyment. That's the first of the three reasons I gave you a minute ago. God does give us these things for our enjoyment. His purposes for us are to live abundant lives, lives where he provides for us generously. But it also mentions, it says, tell them to use their money to do good. That's the third purpose I mentioned, blessing other people, serving other people with the money that he entrusts to us. He goes on to say, they should be rich, those rich people, the people who have resources, should be rich in good works and generous to those in need, always being ready to share with others. Again, that's this third point that I mentioned in God's economy, the third reason why God gives us his things, so that we can be rich in good works, generous to those in need, always ready to share with others. By doing this, they will be storing up their treasure as a good foundation for the future, so that they might be miserable. So that they might eke by and only have the barest of existences. So that they might understand that it's important for them to keep the rules. No, what does it say? So that they may experience true life. Other translations here say, so that they might really live. That's why I say part of God's call to us is to cooperate with his design in these things so that we might truly live the lives that he intended for us to live. When we talk about money, we touch on the question that human beings have wrestled with from the very, very beginning, from the beginning of all recorded history we have. One of the questions that we've wrestled with and we still wrestle with today is, who am I trusting? Who or what am I trusting to meet my basic needs? Who or what am I trusting to meet my basic needs or my family's basic needs? And by basic needs, I mean simply like food, clothing, and shelter. Food, clothing, and shelter. Throughout most of human history, most of us would have spent all of our days laboring hard to produce those, cover those three bases, and many people around the world still do that, just to provide for basic needs. Part of why I say I'm fantastically wealthy is that I don't have to labor from sun up to sundown to provide myself and my family with those basic needs, and I have plenty left over to do other things with. But the question that still is relevant for us is, who am I trusting to meet my basic needs? Am I ultimately trusting God? Am I ultimately trusting my own efforts? Am I trusting some other source to just hand these things to me? Who am I trusting? In God's economy, I want to suggest to you that one of the ways that God provides for our basic needs, God will provide for our basic needs. It talks about this repeatedly throughout Scripture in many more verses than we have time to look at this morning. But one of the ways that God provides most of us with our basic needs is he gives us the strength, the capacity, the opportunity to work, to do work that generates income that helps us to provide for our basic needs. That's part of God's tending, God's stewarding of the world. And I think the question I want you to think about this morning is, do you recognize that God has given and is giving you these things? That God is giving you the strength, God is giving you the capacity, God is giving you the opportunity to provide for yourself and your family. The question of trusting God is easy to answer yes to in good times. It's easy to say, sure, I trust God, when I've got plenty of money in the bank, when I don't have debts that I'm struggling with, when I have a stable job and I don't see it ending anytime soon. If that's your situation, you probably think, that's not so difficult to trust God to provide for me. But what about when you can hardly make ends meet, or when you lose your job, or some of these capacities that I listed earlier, your body, your mind, those opportunities, what if those are taken away from you? What happens to your trust in God to provide for you? What about when you can hardly make ends meet or you lose your job? Some of us have lost our jobs through no action of our own unexpectedly. Or your business goes bankrupt. Some of you have experienced bankruptcy in business, not something that any of us would hope to experience. Or what if you get evicted from your apartment or your house, or you have an expensive health emergency that wasn't at all expected, or a key source of income in your family, like maybe you're married to some your husband and he dies unexpectedly or early, which we know has happened in our family before. What happens then? There's a verse in the Old Testament prophet of Habakkuk that comes to mind as I think about this. One that you should be familiar with if you're not. He says in chapter 3, even though the fig trees have no blossoms. Now understand, in this time, the way God was providing basic needs, or the way people met their basic needs, was that everybody was a farmer. Everybody depended on these crops that are listed here: figs, olives, grapes, animals in the field. Those were the ways you provided for your family. And this ancient prophet is saying, even though the fig trees have no blossoms, which means no figs this year, and there are no grapes on the vines, even though the olive crop fails and the fields lie empty and barren, even though the flocks die in the fields and the cattle barns are empty, yet I will rejoice in the Lord. I will be joyful in the God of my salvation. Now, like you, I read that and I think, you're going to rejoice in the Lord when you're in such disaster? I'm sure that at least what he means is, I will continue to hold out trust in God. I will continue to believe that God is who God says he is. I will remember that God has provided for me in the past, and so that even if I'm walking through a season of disaster, I'm going to hold on to that memory of God's provision in the past and trust him to provide for me in the future. I think that recognizing these truths, thinking about them when we're in good times, when things are pretty flush and we feel pretty good about how things are working, that's an important time to think about these things, to be training my heart and my mind for tough times or for hard times so that I'm ready for them. So if Habakkuk were writing today, he might write something like this, something kind of a paraphrase that we might write today. Even if I lose my job or my business, even if my savings disappear, even though my friends and family can't or won't help me because of the season I'm in, even if my investments tank, I don't think that word's in the Bible, so we're paraphrasing, even if my investments tank, I will remember that those things weren't really mine to begin with, that they were all given to me by God. I will continue to trust him to provide for me, and I will thank him for how generous he's been to me in so many ways, in so many ways. I want to end by inviting you to think about two questions. And actually, I'm going to invite the worship team to come and take their places here as we reflect together, give you a moment to do that. I'm going to invite you to close your eyes as we did last week. I'm just going to ask you to, I have two yes-no questions for you to think about and to answer within your own heart and in your own thoughts. The first question is, do you acknowledge that your money is not really yours, that it has been given to you by God, that it is entrusted to you by God? And not just your money, but do you acknowledge that your investments, your real estate properties, your retirement accounts, your business, if you own one, is not really yours? The work situation that you're in that provides for you is not really yours. It's been given to you by God. It's been entrusted to you by God. If you can say yes to that, I just want to give you a moment to say yes to that question in your own heart. To say, Lord, I do acknowledge that you have given me so many advantages, so many opportunities. I am so thankful for what you have given to me in my work opportunities, but also in the finances and all the stuff that you've entrusted to me. Second question, do you trust God to provide you with what you need? Will you trust God to provide you with your basic needs for food, clothing, shelter, tomorrow, next week, next month? Will you say to God, I trust you to provide for me, to provide what I need? I think many of us probably do want to say yes to that. Maybe you're already saying a clear yes to that. You know, one of the things that's interesting is about the God's economy is that the way God ultimately can tell if we're saying yes to that question is if we're giving some of it away. If you study the Bible, you'll see that God will say, I don't need you to come to the temple and make sacrifices and go through the motions. What I can see is that you're not actually using your stuff to care for people. You're not actually giving any of it away. You're just going through the motions. A regular habit of giving generously is part of how we say yes to God in this area. Yes, I trust you to provide. Part of what we're saying is, I trust you to provide more of this next week. So I'm peaceful with giving some of it away, giving it away generously. And what we find is that as we do that, it reshapes our thinking. It reshapes our hearts. It reminds us that our money is not really ours. To God. Lord, we acknowledge that you are the giver of good things, the giver of good gifts. We acknowledge, Lord, we're humbled to think about how rich we are by how much you've entrusted to us in health, in wealth, in opportunities. Peaceful lives, Lord, just incredible, incredible riches that we enjoy, and we are so grateful to you. Lord, continue to deepen our habits of gratitude, our habits of generosity, our grateful giving back to you of all of the incredible wealth that you've entrusted to us. And where we struggle to do that, Lord, invite us deeper. Invite us in. Show us another step that we can take to honor your call in our lives. I ask all these things in Jesus' name.